Welcome to the Lead Lifestyle podcast, where we believe every person can achieve their life goals as a result of their work, not in spite of it. I interview the best minds in the world so you can learn their philosophy, their daily routines, and get some practical advice so you can survive at work, enjoy life, and live longer. My guest today is David Wilkinson. David coaches men to create results that transform their world. He helps men get clarity on where they want to go in life. Then he coached them to achieve that transformation. So we first met 7 years ago, and seeing his evolution and the expression of himself in a really authentic way, who he is, how he lives, and what he stands for, it's just been really inspiring to watch that evolution. So, Dave, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man, and thanks for the lovely intro. Very
No,
nice.
it's the truth, mate. It's the truth. It's like I said before we went on air, it is interesting to see how these challenges that we've both had have kind of resulted in a similar journey.
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting, right? I was because we met about 7 years ago, right? And I've always got this one like image and story of you, right? So when we're on the mastermind call, and I was actually humming the song this morning, right? So we were on the mastermind program, right? And then we were in this penthouse, weren't we? One night we went up this penthouse suite in Liverpool, and we had like the whole group of us were in there. We were having food and drinks and stuff like that, and we're having this amazing experience of what it would be like to kind of like evolve and have higher level experiences. And my image, right, of you is playing the piano, right? Playing the song by Drake. What is it? Just Hold On, We're Coming Home. And you were playing that and singing it. And I was actually humming that song this morning. And it was like just thinking about this podcast, and it made me remember that situation. So forever, forever caught in time in that moment, mate, me and you.
Bloody hell, mate. I don't even remember doing that.
Yeah.
I must have been
And
enamored. I can't even play the piano.
did
Is
it very well as
I'm a master of illusion.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So yeah. So that come to mind, this one. I was like, yeah, I've got to mention that.
Mate, hold on, we're coming home.
That's it. That's the one.
Good job that people weren't videoing and Instagramming live, that sort of thing back then. It would be all
Yeah.
over.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't, yeah, people were on social media, right? Facebook heavy, but like not as much on their Insta.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that is I'm really introverted. And that was the first time I'd met all you guys, and I was so nervous. This actually would be a good point because I quit my job at the bank when I worked at the bank. Must have been end of 2013, and like loads of my clients left because what you find in fitness, I'm sure you found, is around Christmas, New Year, people think it's like an awesome time for gyms. Actually, November, December, people are like Christmas shopping, parties, seeing the family. They end up not training, and then they think, right, I'm not getting anything from this, so they kind of cancel their membership or, cancel PT packages, thinking they'll pick it up in the new year. January comes, they're broke. No one actually buys things in January. They buy it like February, March, or even later, like April, May time. So I was like completely broke, didn't have a job, and I'd got a loan out to do that mastermind. I was like forcing myself into like a better situation in my life. And I was so like small-minded, poor kind of mindset that I was just living in fear and anxiety every single day. And when I went to that penthouse thing, it was like a Michelin star restaurant, wasn't it? I'd like, with silver service, I felt like I was more like the people who were like pouring the wine than the person who was worth drinking it. It was really an odd experience. I'll always remember it. So
Wow.
I've
Isn't
probably,
it's amazing that?
yeah. So I probably drank a lot to get through it, and then ended up on the piano. I couldn't. I
End up on the
literally
piano.
can't even
So
remember that.
serenading the group. But is it like, it's fascinating, like I never got that impression of you, and I'm not saying that you like I like there was no way that was coming across that you weren't being who you were, I kind of got the sense that I liked you when I met you, and I was like, yeah, this guy's a really good guy. And obviously we met subsequently across other masterminds in that year. Barcelona again was the other one, and then Liverpool later on in the year. But yeah, and it's interesting what what we feel is going on the inside, but what we're projecting on the outside. So I've got this image of this guy, like, oh wow, he's so cool and relaxed. He's on the piano and he's doing this Drake song. And like in this version, it was like amazing, you know? So it's fascinating how we feel in those moments, right? But the whole point of that moment was for us to expand our mind, wasn't it? To be weighted
on. Still crying.
And
I'm still literally crying with laughter from that story, mate. Sorry to interrupt.
It's all right. That's great. And how would it kind of pushed us and expanded our mind a little bit more. So I definitely think it was, we met there, but it was definitely a great experience of like personal growth for, I think, for everybody in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'll give him a shout. It was Chris Brown's mastermind.
Yeah, it's Chris.
Really, really good. And I had the same experience in Barcelona, because Chris would take us to these luxurious locations that part of that, he said, was designed to get you out of the norm and show you what you could achieve. But you know, I'm literally from like a tiny little farm in Wales. It was just such a weird experience to be living this life that no one in my family, none of my friends were experiencing. And so yeah, it was really good. Interestingly, I'm a musician, like I've always played music, so it, you know, even though I'm introverted, I think I am weirdly more comfortable like playing on stage or doing a performance. It's where I feel really relaxed. I've always wondered if I could harness that in some sort of flow state type thing with work.
Absolutely.
But yeah, always just feel really relaxed with music. I want to ask you like a similar question on this, in that psychologically speaking, there's a term called control. So control is whether you feel you're in control of something that you can control, or perhaps whether people are trying to control something that they can't control, where there's some sort of fear. So I'm just going to keep this really broad, but what's your experience of that when you're coaching clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I like the thought of that. We definitely have an illusion of control. I think that's a huge thing for a lot of people, the illusion of control. I can control other people, situations, change. This situation's making me feel a certain way. This individual is making me feel a certain way, whether or not that is a relationship of theirs, a boss of theirs, whatever. And I think we have this element where I can control and influence what they do, what they say, and how things work out for me, versus actually the truest form of control, which is I can only control how I perceive what's going on, how I relate to the situation, and what behaviors and actions I take from it. So I think definitely in the coaching, what I've experienced is, and I say this from a place of also learning this, the experience the hard way myself as well, kind of being in that illusion of control. Okay, my life isn't where I want it to be. I'm not feeling the results. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get everything and everybody else to change, but then it can't. So I feel stressed about that. I feel stressed because things aren't changing outside of me. This is creating a conflict. I wish the world was different, but it isn't. And that is the element where this illusion is created. However, I get clients to look more internally. Okay, this is happening, but it's your perception of what's happening that is creating the discomfort for you. Let's focus on what we can control, your narrative, your perception, and from that, how you feel and the actions that you take. So yeah, control is certainly more of an internal me, what I can do, versus putting that control outside. I think we're very disillusioned with that.
Yeah. So what's an example of like a problem that could cause for someone?
So,
having that of control.
I mean, let's take the big one, a relationship. I think that's a big one, a personal relationship. I wish, you know, I work a lot with men. You know, I wish my wife or my partner would do this. I wish they would behave this way. I wish they were more tidy. I wish they would clean this up after themselves. I wish they wouldn't say that. I wish they would let me do this more freely. Do you know those just general fleeting comments that come out of people's mouths? And actually what that is creating, it's creating a complete conflict within that moment, because your wife or your partner's just being them. They're just over there doing them. They're in their life, doing themselves. It's you then who have the problem. If that is causing a frustration or trigger for you, then in essence, you're the one with the problem, not them. Now, we're not talking here about somebody physically or mentally or emotionally being abusive to somebody. We're just talking about the general frictions that we can create within our home environment, our relationship. You know, I wish my kids were doing this. I wish my wife would do that. I'll be happier when they do this. This general consensus, we try to get clients to really realize it's like, if you're triggered by them and what they're doing, that's your problem and not theirs. And so if you can spend all your time in the relationship trying to change that person and actually losing that battle, if you see it that way, it becomes disillusioned, the relationship breaks down, somebody doesn't really properly change because nobody likes to be forced changed. And it's actually, if you come into that position of going, okay, what is triggering me here? What is it about me that is being revealed by this situation that I can actually become free from? So that's the beginning.
I've experienced the same issue with illusion of control, but I was applying it in a different way, where I was limiting my own actions for fear of what other people would think. And I made up this imaginary, you know, scenario once where I really wanted to join the military reserves, you know, and as you know, you run the gym, you're busy, but if, you know, it's the odd weekend or night, you know, I've always wanted to do it. And I was really holding myself back from doing it. And I was, you know, reading all the forums, watching all the YouTube things, procrastinating, literally learning everything about it, but I wasn't actually applying because I was really worried that Sarah, my girlfriend, would kind of feel like I was abandoning her, or, you know, because she was working with me at the gym, like making her do more of the work or cover my shifts, or even if I did end up passing out and getting deployed, like, you know, would I be away for 6 months, and was that selfish? Mm-hmm. And I had this weird codependency with her for years where I was just asking her about it and like asking her approval for it, and she obviously wouldn't approve because it was something that would kind of worsen her situation. But mm-hmm. one day I just thought, you know what, I'm gonna get old with regret if I don't actually go and do this. Mm-hmm. So applied, went and did it, and you know, about 3-4 months in, she said to me, you know, I'm really proud of you for doing it, and I know that you've always wanted to do it. So I'd made up this mess of emotions for years, and it was when I just went and did what I wanted to do, she supported me anyway because that's a loving relationship.
Yeah, she wasn't able to give you the permission you were seeking because it's not her job. And it's really powerful that she recognized that actually and was like, I'm not going to sit here and give you the permission that you want. It's because it's about you ultimately giving yourself that permission. Like, this is what this would honor me in this moment. To honor ourselves is to express ourselves in the way that we truly feel we want to, whether or not it's not right or wrong. It's just, it is what it is. And I think often when we feel that sense of uncertainty, I'm a little unsure, we go outside of ourselves. Please give me permission, validate me, especially people we love and respect, whether or not that's our parents, you know, very close personal relationships. Maybe sometimes it's our boss or whoever we're around. Sometimes it's our clients if we're working in a fitness industry. And we're looking for them to almost approve that we can do this, that I can do it. Give me the permission that I need. But realistically, it's all about from ourselves in that situation. So she'd done you a massive favor and you learned a great lesson from that. They always say the people closest to our best teachers, right?
yeah, definitely. And it was like giving less fucks about it, less fucks about what people would think, and just taking action. And also realizing that life is full of doors and you can go through them, but you can also turn around and walk back out if it's not the right thing. And I actually ended up having to leave after 5 months of doing it because I was... Okay. My mental health was just dropping because I was literally trying to do two jobs at once. It was a pretty difficult unit that I tried to get into. But that speaks to, you know, something else, which is my ego. And at the time I was like, I want to be the best in all areas of life, multiple things, mm-hmm. as an athlete, as a business owner, mm-hmm. and, you know, as a, you know, a soldier.
Yeah.
And you can't do it. It's not a balanced life. Or let me rephrase that. In my opinion, you can do it, but something's going to give.
Yeah, really powerful. Somebody's doing a bit of building work next door. Apologies for that. Someone's knocking through the wall. Sorry about that, man. So that's really interesting, right? And it, but I think in that situation, you almost had to go through it to realize that for yourself. Like, if this had been like still down the road, there'd always been that question, what if? And so actually you doing that real courageous thing, walking through the door, but I think even more powerfully, being comfortable, like, I can walk back through. I haven't just hung my whole life on this. It's got to work out. That's massive, man. That's really powerful. You've done that.
Yeah, it was like a superpower because I realized that no one cares what I do. Mm-hmm. It's up to me. And no one cares when I quit. Like, mm-hmm. I also made up this weird story of what people are going to say to me when I quit, but literally no one said anything. It's like, everyone's just really supportive. So, you know, it led me to changing my gym, changing my career, starting the podcast. Massive, massive lessons over the past few years just from that.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. So that's, again, another fascinating part, right, where you can actually take those lessons of life and then apply them and that, how it actually changes the situation. Yeah. Very interesting.
Let me change direction. What got you into being a life coach?
So I, as you well know, you know, I was in the health and fitness industry. That's what I was in for a very, very long time. I mean, my career, and that was 14 years long, you know, from when I started to when I left. So that was the biggest bulk of it. There was a few things. Number one, I kind of got to the point where I wasn't, when I was coaching people in health and fitness, I wasn't as stimulated by it anymore. I was getting a little bit like, there's got to be more than this, as in we're helping people get results here, losing weight, but they're not like sticking to it longer term. Why do some people create great results and transformations and some people don't? And I was trying to find what was that sticking point. So I was like, there's got to be more for up here in the mindset. I thought it's not just all like what we eat and what we do. I thought there's got to be more. But also coming out of that, and back in 2016, I was like, right, I really need to work on myself. I really need to work on who I am. I was kind of had a big identity wrapped in the health and fitness game, in the gym. Like, I'm this person. I'm the fit person with my friends group. I'm the business owner. And that was no longer there. So that I'd kind of shut the gym and I felt like the identity was gone. I'd put it in the wrong thing. So this also started a journey of a lot more personal development. Now, don't get me wrong, as we've already alluded to, so into personal growth and development, but this is in a different way. Like, what are my beliefs? Who am I actually? Like, where am I going with all this? So I spent time getting support myself, went to some therapy, went through some coaching as well, and then started a life coaching qualification in the early part of 2018. So kind of all these things started to align. And even when I was going through it, and then I did the certificate, then I did a diploma in it, I was kind of like, I don't know if I really want to make a career out of this, like just sitting with somebody and talking to them, like, how does this work? And do I like it? And, you know, will I be comfortable like asking questions versus telling people what to do? You know, you feel like personal training is very instructional. But yeah, so that kind of all kind of come together like a big melting pot. And then, yeah, I just moved into it, started coaching people. And I was like, I love this. So the two parts to that is, number one, feeling that there needed to be more to get people better results, like to help people transform versus change. I think we understand that change just, yeah, I've made a few changes here, but actually transforming someone's life, the way they live permanently. You know, there's got to be a lot happening in the mind. And the other part was a personal part for me, a journey that I was going on and going through, and could see the power of actually what it is to work on yourself, understand yourself, peel back them layers. There's a lot comes from that. So that was the thing that got me there, you know?
Yeah. So almost as if from an identity standpoint, you'd gone into fitness and started your own business and had that career because the 14-year-old younger version of you, you know, that's what they were motivated by. And then things evolve and change, I guess, and you're living a life based on the decisions that your younger self made, and then it gets to the point where things need to change, right? And I think people I've had a lot of clients in the gym, and I'm sure you did, where you know they need to quit their job. Like, you need to change your situation. And the reason you can't diet and the reason you keep staying in the gym is because you're not happy with your life. It's nothing to do with the diet or the training. It's to do with you hate your boss, your life's shit, and you're miserable. So why don't we talk about that?
Absolutely. I mean, so that's like, as in from like how we saw that in the personal training industry, or like how I see it now.
Well, did you experience that yourself?
Like for me personally, like my own life.
When you were at the gym, like eventually, when your identity evolved.
Because even from in after 2016, I kept on a small group of clients and I was still training them up until I fully stepped away the early part of 2020, you know, paying the bills, building a second business. So what that's when I really started to notice it a lot more, because now I'm actually going down the route of working on myself. I was a lot more present. When I was working in the gym originally, the fitness industry, I was always about the future. I was never in the current moment. But when I was starting to be trained as a coach and then get clients in coaching, I started to slow down a lot and could see in the fitness clients that I was working with, which were not my coaching, performance coaching clients, you could see like, you know, relationship challenges, you know, I'm stressed all the time at work or in the business and they weren't making any change. And you're almost, you know this, and you know you're training people, you almost become a bit like a coach or a therapist anyway, a bit like the guy who works in the barbershop or the guy that works behind the bar, right? People talk to you and open up in a lot deeper way. And you could see that. But people were like, oh, you know, I feel overweight or I'm a bit unhealthy here because of what I'm eating. No, like you're in major stress. You're in absolute anxiety, fight or flight every single day. And that is controlling your eating habits, your hormones, your cortisol levels. It doesn't matter how many times you control your eating or work out, you're not going to get to that place of optimal health. And so you could see it, like people challenged in the mind. And yeah, do you see it kind of like, well, it would maybe help you if you moved careers, or maybe help you if you calmed down in that business, or maybe it would help you if you left that relationship. But who are you to give that, to say that to another human being, you know? Yeah, that relationship maybe is not serving you, but that was 100%. And I think the eyes, you almost see it through a different lens, don't you? You see life through a different lens because of your own growth and because of what you do. You're like, there's no amount of training, nutrition that's going to get these people to where they want to be if they don't help with this. But that's not what they're employing me to do. They're hiring me for that service, so I can't do anything. So then they become this moment of like, now I'm frustrated. Now I'm in a place where I have a lot more answers to give, but you don't want to hear them. And that also kind of started that journey of like, now I'm a little bit discontented with this now.
Yeah, I can relate, mate. I can relate.
I
And it's like the final straw is, you know what, I'm going to change. I'm speaking for you here, so you correct me. The final straw is like, I'm going to change how you perceive me as a coach so that we can have that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And I was almost like, I love what you said before, and I didn't really think about it like that, where you were like, my younger self wanted to be a personal trainer. My younger self wanted to be that. And that was what made the decision. But my maturer self had started to make these new decisions, but people were still seeing me as just the personal trainer. People obviously liked me and enjoyed that, but they weren't seeing me. Do you know what it is, though? I think the truth is, I wasn't seeing me how I really was until I did. And then I had to walk away because I was like, I see me now at this level and I really value and honor that, the work I've done. And I don't think this is where my true heart lies and I must now walk away. So it was about, yes, partly them, but I think me, really about seeing me for what I was capable of and then actually recognizing that and going, I'm not going to get the fulfillment out of this now. It now has to be something a little more.
Did you experience any backlash from clients or friends or family, like when you made that change in career?
When I stepped out of the gym fully in 2020, when I'd like, obviously because COVID hit as well, and I was just like, this is the perfect opportunity to come away now. I was already only in like 13 hours a week tops, but I was like, I've got the space now to really go for it. I always wanted to leave in 2020 anyway. It was always the plan after I got married, but it really accelerated that. And I was in some clients, yeah, never spoke to me after it, never spoke to me since. You know, I'd worked with these people for years. I'd done the best that I could. I was as open and honest as I could be when I was stepping away. And it, like, some clients were really supportive and some, like, never spoke to me after that day. You know, clients of, like, 4 or 5 years. And I was quite hurt by it, actually. But I think, like, it's, yeah, I kind of have to be, like, it's not about me. It's about them. And I think that was the real reason. You know, you go through that emotion, like, yeah, I'm a bit angry about this, a bit sad about this. But then eventually you're like, it's not about me. It's about you. If you feel that way, it's about you, your fear. It's your fear of what's not available or lost. And life has to move forward, you know. So that was the only little thing. I think everybody knew, because from like 2018, I was kind of already going to work. Friends and family have always been supportive. To be honest, mate, I think some friends and family don't even know what I do, really. You know what I mean? My dad, bless him, I think my dad's still trying to get his head, like, I don't think he really understands what I do. I think when he knew I was in training people in the gym, he was like, I can see what that is. This, I'm just like, I don't know what you do. What do you mean you talk to people on Zoom? I'm quite lucky. I've got a very, and you've met her, you know, you've met my fiance, and, you know, I've got a very supportive relationship there, you know, someone that kind of like really was behind me with that and really encouraging me to follow my dreams. And I think that was very helpful, especially when you come to that uncertain time of done this for so long and now I'm going to go into this new phase, and can I do it? Am I capable? Am I enough? And that definitely helped a lot.
Yeah. Did you work together, you and Helen Lee, in the gym? Like, were you business partners on that?
Yes, we're co-owners, yeah. So we're co-owners in the gym 2012 till 2016. So yeah, so our personal relationship and co-business owners as well. And that had both its amazing results from that, but its challenges as well. You know, like anything, isn't it? You know, because you're getting no let off as well. And you're coming into this situation where work starts going home. You've got nothing different to talk about. Egos, you know, I'm like, I had a big challenge with egotistical behavior. You know, I'm not kind of afraid to talk about, you know, like that element of like, I'm right and I know what I'm doing. And it's like, it's not open to listening. And it's not the conclusive way. So we did so much great stuff together because of it, because we complemented each other, but there was always that clash. And I'm so pleased that like our relationship held through that. You know, we had some rocky times, but it held through, and now we're in our own careers and we can see the value of like supporting each other with what each other does in a separate manner. Yeah. Cause it, again, for yourself, you've got that, haven't you? You and your partner, you in the gym together, right?
Yeah, yeah. But recently, again, COVID changed things for us. I've just moved to like a mentoring role. So I just cover a shift on a Sunday and help out at the team meetings. And I kind of, you know, any labor or renovation, what, you know, when we had to move gyms, obviously massively involved in it. But the direction of it is totally up to Sarah and and a coach called Tom Smith who coaches there. Like, they're big into powerlifting, and I'm not, but I've always done powerlifting for rugby players and you know, same as you, like, it is the basis of any decent program, isn't it? Squat, bench, deadlift, pull-ups, carrying stuff. So it's always been the gym, but my gym's called Raw Strength, right?
Yeah.
And so when I started it, obviously that's what it was about. It was like a rocky montage, sandbags, running up hills, flipping tires.
Nice.
And it got watered down massively because I wanted to make some money. So it was like, right, I'm going to go mainstream. I'm going to do boot camps, going to do group PT stuff. Mm-hmm. And similar to you, I ended up really not enjoying that because it wasn't authentic. It wasn't who I am. And it wasn't about you know, the brand and the business anymore. It was literally about money. And I started really devaluing clients. They were just numbers to me. And I ended up getting, you know, a ton of revenue, but really minimal profits. So it was just a load of stress. So then, you know, it just started dwindling down and I wasn't happy with it. And then COVID happened and we went, you know what? What if we just started our dream gym and it's powerlifting and, you know, I can train there and do strongman stuff and have a laugh, but, you know, Sarah can run it and take the reins. And it's just been awesome. Like, we're so much happier in our relationship. I just kind of play a support role and I've coached for, you know, similar to you, like 14, 15 years. So I've got so much experience. I can get them through problems really quickly. Or if it's marketing, I can teach them about marketing, how to do videos and that sort of thing. And it's been really, really enjoyable for me. I don't know how they're finding it, but I'm really enjoying it. And yeah, it's funny when you step back and go, you know what, why weren't we doing this from the start and being authentic and, you know, doing what we each want to do rather than trying to placate the other person or not tell the other person, you know, in a relationship when they're being stupid or probably not listening. But I know that I've had coaches in business and had a few therapy sessions, and I come back and tell Sarah all the things that they've told me, and she goes, "Oh, I've told you that. I told you that a million times."
Yeah, but you taught me, you know what I mean? I needed someone else to tell me who's non-biased.
Yeah. Anyway, I've gone on a massive tangent here. I forgot what we were talking about.
No,
I
think it's good though, but it's very similar though, isn't it? You know, we've both had that experience where we've both been in a personal relationship, running a business. I would really like when you were saying a lot of the stuff there about like how you were scaling it and growing it, and a lot came into about the numbers and stuff. I totally resonate with that so much. You know, I got to that stage and it became about how much could we get in, and very high turnover and low profits because I was reinvesting back into the gym, bigger, more, better. And you become very like disillusioned with it and very kind of dissatisfied. And I feel that, you know, when you're saying that, it's absolute mirror story. But it's really amazing when you said that, and I was like, you know, at the beginning of COVID, why don't we just sit down and open our dream gym? And it's like, why didn't we ask that question 6 years ago, 7 years ago? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like the perfect question. And now look what it's done for you guys. So yeah, amazing.
The power of the decisive question, right? I guess that's your job.
That is my job. Powerful question and listen them.
What's the difference between personal training, coaching, and live coaching? The delivery of it.
So the delivery in the life coaching setting is all about listening, presence, and powerful questioning, and allowing the other person to come to the realization of awareness that they want. So I'm not entering the conversation, this is the most important thing, without I have no agenda for that person. Even if we spoke last week and we're on something, I'm still open to what they might bring to the table in this session. Yes, there'll be a little bit of a, you know, have we given much thought to this? What we talked about last week, where we are with this, but there's still no agenda. So I'm in that place where I'm just curious. Okay, so, you know, what's creating that for you? And what are you feeling with that? And what options are available to you? And you're asking powerful questions and listening. And they're the whole point. And then we may be allowing space. I call it holding space for that person to create the awareness that they didn't have before that hour, or the optimism that they didn't have. That's the difference. In personal training, I have an agenda. I have a program, have a session here ready for you. This is your goal, and you wanted this. Be, you know, lose 10 pounds. You know, you wanted to put more, you know, another 10 kilo on your deadlift. Now, don't get me wrong. They come in and they had a sore back. We might need to change things up, but I'm going to instruct you through this moment of doing this. This is how to do this. This is how to do that. And then we go through that session. So that's the difference. And so it creates for me, they're both vital parts, But the life coaching creates powerful awareness that once somebody has done something that they've become aware of, they cannot see their world differently now. It's now they see it this way and it can't go back. But if I do a deadlift, you know, I might need to tweak a few things, but has it really changed or transformed anything longer term in that person? No, because next week we still got a deadlift again. So that's what it does. It's like holding that space and allowing the person to step into it that creates that change.
When someone, let's say someone listening to this, has had that situation where they've been able to step back and get into that holding space and have those, the frames are changing for them. Mm-hmm. What are a few things that you recommend people do to stay in touch with that each day, with rituals or with habits or, you know, or even like a physical practice? Is there anything that you have seen, despite people having different needs and having to be asked different questions, is there a trend?
That's the funny one, isn't it? Like, because it is like, we do want to end up like boxing and packaging things so people can get a general overview of like what works for one can work for many. And I think there is certain elements of like, how do I maintain that awareness? And then can increase the skill of it. And I always like to take people to, Maslow has this hierarchy of competency, right? So everybody knows Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So if you say Maslow, everybody's like, oh, hierarchy of needs. But he has something called a hierarchy of competence, right? Which is basically, it goes to like a triangle of four areas, which is like, unconscious incompetence. Then it goes conscious incompetence, conscious competence, and unconscious competence. And basically the way I explain this to people is, this is the levels that we want to move through in. So I'll explain it to you and then see how this works on people, right? So at the bottom of the triangle, we have what we call unconscious incompetence, meaning I don't know any different and I have no skill level to change anything. Like, I'm just blissfully unaware. So I'm lacking clarity. I'm struggling with limiting beliefs. I'm stuck where I am and I have no idea what is creating that or how I'm there. I'm just going through life. I know there's something, but I have no idea how to get out of it. That's where a lot of people start. They just feel that something off. They don't know what it is and they don't know how to get out of it. So by coaching, you take them into the next level, which is conscious incompetence. So now they become aware of something, but they don't have the skill to change. So I've become aware, I've been aware of this limiting belief, or I lack self-worth here, or I'm a little bit challenged with my value. I'm not giving myself permission to grow, but I don't know what to do. So step one for every single human being on the planet is awareness. Without awareness, you can't do nothing. So everybody needs that. Once we've got it, then we want to practice awareness. So as you move into the next thing, it's conscious competence. So getting someone to consciously practice awareness and practice tools or skills that can keep that building for them. So that might be things like journaling is a very powerful tool. I think we can't really go far past that, of how important it is for people to process thoughts, to process awareness, to deepen the awareness that they have of themselves.
People are conscious competence.
Yes.
And to maintain awareness, you can't go far past journaling as a way to process your thoughts.
Yeah. So basically what that allows us to do is that allows us to practice the awareness. So the new awareness that we have created, the new awareness about ourselves, the new awareness about letting go of the story or narrative that keeps us stuck, or the one we've told ourselves about why we aren't where we want to be, or why we aren't enough as a person, why we aren't good enough. Once we have that awareness in there, then journaling's a very powerful tool to keep practicing it and re-establishing it home. And the more you keep practicing the awareness and bring it home, the more it then becomes unconscious competence, which means we have automatically then created this awareness where we don't have to think about it anymore. So journaling almost kind of pre-programs it in, if that makes sense. So we go through that cycle, and it's like, this is the operating program of yours that isn't helping. You've now aware of, I've shined the light on it. Oh, shit, yep, I can see that. This is the actual situation and perception, new awareness. We're going to retake that old one out, put this new one in. Then we're going to keep installing it with journaling as often as possible. The more, the better, the more frequency. And then eventually we don't have to keep practicing it because it just becomes the new way we see the world and ourselves. And that's through that process. How long that takes depends on the person, right? But I think journaling is the most powerful part of that. And a lot of people talk about it now, and you know, like it's a big thing, oh, journaling. And I think like there's many ways, right? And there's no right or wrong, but you've got, you know, powerful questions you can ask yourself on a daily basis. I think that's a really good one. But I'm very much a thought processor. You know, how do I feel today? What's going on? What am I thinking about? What about that new thing I thought and create awareness about? What about, like, where is that taking me? You know, what is available to me if I drop the stories that are the fears and concerns that I have? Like, all of these things are really powerful bringing it. And I think, like, we even say, like, you know, journaling's not like an Anne Frank's Dear Diary, but it still can help. Like, this is what I did yesterday and this is how I felt. So I think you can do different things to get to the same outcome. It's about keeping it fresh and interesting for the person. But it's not an exercise of journaling to just do for the sake of doing. It's to actually process them thoughts more powerfully. I think that works a lot.
And what about when someone's in unconscious incompetence? You know, is there anything someone could do to kind of spark those realizations that is like a self-help thing? Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, you know, just booking like a random day off and walking up a mountain alone or something like that and just thinking about life. Like, is that beneficial? Or do you think that you need to have a conversation with someone?
You need both, because what you need is space. You need space to think. Because that's what we don't have now. We're not capable of being bored anymore. We're constantly in the process of doing. We have to always do. I need to be, you know, busy in business and busy at working out. And then I need to be on this 24/7. You even can see people sitting in coffee shops on their own. They're on this. They stand in a queue. They're on this. And what they haven't got is space. And space gives us time to stop and then gives us time to think. And when we start to think, things will automatically start coming through. Even if it's discontent or unhappiness with something, that's still a great place because it's what is creating that for me. What is being revealed here that I wasn't aware of in the first place. So I think space and walks in nature create space just as a default of doing them. Where, you know, if we were like going to a CrossFit class, we're not really going to get space because it's in the process of doing. But I think the other way is like time alone, time to sit alone, still, doing nothing, stink, be bored, daydream if you need to, just then times. So that mixed with actually having somebody to extract that out of you. What people are missing is the fact that you were just too biased to your own agenda. And so when you sit there and you get stuck with something or you're not where you want to be, you'll stay in the cycle of perpetual self-analysis. So you have to be right. You're like, your ego has to be right. Even if it causes you pain and suffering, you still want to be right. And so sometimes we need that other person just outside of you who just asks you the right question and helps you create the right awareness. So you can go, yeah, damn, that is... I never thought about it like that before. I didn't see it.
Let me interrupt you. I've thought of a question when we had that little break. I went through a period with Sarah where I was very codependent with her because I'm quite a quiet guy. I keep, you know, my private life private. This podcast is actually really helpful for me getting a lot of my stories out. You know, it is really beneficial. But I found that I wasn't talking to my mates. I wasn't asking for feedback. I didn't have any mentors. I went through a period of time where no one was helping me with my business. I was just in, you know, stupid exploration mode. And the only person I could decompress with was Sarah. And it got to a point where, you know, we both consciously decided, you know what, you need to go and create some friends in business and talk to them about business stuff. You need to go and get some friends who do you know, the same sport and same hobbies as you, and talk to them about that stuff and create space for us to have a good relationship. And likewise, I used to coach her in lifting, and I don't know if you ever did that with Helen Lee. It ends up getting like, it's loads of little arguments and stuff, and
yeah.
Then she went to get her own powerlifting coach, and you know, and he's been really good, and you know, for years now, and it's just all these little things that when you look back, it's obvious. Like, why were we just living in this bubble, you know, on top of each other with all these thoughts and dreams and goals, and trying to not necessarily support each other, but decompress and vomit thoughts on top of each other all the time. Now I can go, and you know, you've probably experienced this as well. Oh, you know, what have you done today? You know, to your partner, and actually have a conversation instead of, oh, I know exactly what you've done, you know, 5 minutes ago, like, get away from me. So yeah. I've read a lot about how men can create support groups for themselves and how important that is to, you know, have a group of guys that are not what I would call like toxic guys that just want you to go down the pub and, you know, drink and do drugs and party and are really cynical about life and, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? They're not your friends. They're just like, that's just, you know, people in like blind mode, I would say, who don't know, who don't have awareness of themselves. So they put other people down. That is like what I found a lot of my friends have been like since you left school, because you think they're your friends. And then as you go out on your own journey of, you know what, like for me, I'm going to go and be a pro rugby player. Then people start trying to put me down. Then I'm going to try and start my own business. People start putting you down. And then 10, 15 years of that, you look back and go, you know what, we're on such different paths. I can't relate to you anymore. We're not friends anymore. Actually, it's draining to be around you. But it's very difficult to, for me at least, to find guys who are on the same level. And I've got, you know, good 2, 3, 4 guys now that I can pick up the phone anytime, send them a voice note on WhatsApp and say, you know, here's what I'm feeling, or I feel like shit this week, I don't know why. And they'll ask me those questions to kind of readdress it. But mate, I've probably spent way too long, you know, a decade without that. How important do you think that is, both for your relationship with your intimate partner and for your own growth and feedback from other guys?
Yeah, I think it's massively, because I think like what comes to mind there is like, it's not the job of your partner and your relationship to fix you or fix your problems or even to rescue you. You know, that we come into a relationship and we're there to have a relationship, not the other person, parent or mentor or coaches. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not times when the other person can be a powerful sounding board or just there kind of connecting and helping each other. But if we depend upon it, if we put the power all the time, you need to answer my questions, fulfill that need, because you make me feel secure. We're not learning there. We're not growing there. What about if that relationship ends? What about that person's not around? Then you're left independent. You're not depending on yourself anymore. So I think it can create like definitely dynamic challenges with that, where we almost like, if we use the words need and need the other person, it's already fucked. You know, it's not good. So to have that space away, to be in another environment where you can create the connections with other like-minded individuals that can give that support, that, and you can give it to them. That's why it works as a nice two-way. I think it's really, really important. But again, it's just another relationship and being very aware that, okay, what about if these people were no longer in my life? Do I feel a need to have them? Or is it like I can be okay without these there? I can be okay without any of these being there. I might not want it, but I can be okay. So, you know, I've got a group of guys that I've met in Spain, which has been really powerful. And we do that every week, self-development. It was really interesting. One of the guys set it up himself, you know, English guy. And we've got very different people from different backgrounds, different countries, different nationalities, different races. It's amazing. All come together in the core element of growth and self-development. And we have a session and a meal together every week. It's really powerful. You know, I've got other, I think, kind of like friends who are on similar levels to me and do similar things to me, which helps in that and support each other. You know, I've got we train in jiu-jitsu, which I go to them, we do something similar, and but it's all about that element. And I've got my own coach as well, you know, that can provide. So it's having these different outlets, I suppose, where you can be in them spaces and grow and develop in them without being dependent on them. I think that's the key. And if we only have our relationship and that's where we're throwing everything in, what happens if?
So you advocate a belief that one can handle anything and be independent. Be independently minded, but obviously use support because it's helpful.
Yeah, I think it's not, I'm not talking about us being like we can be okay just on our own, because as people we naturally gravitate to being around other human beings. I think that's very, very important for us. It's not about us being alone, but it's about us being okay that we can be. Because if I can't feel like I can be alone and make this decision on my own, that I'm too attached to other people, have to give me the reassurance that I need. Well, reassurance is fear. If I need reassurance, I'm fearful. That's okay. Actually acknowledging that I'm okay, like I don't know, and it's natural for me to feel a little afraid here, unsure. But I'm not ever going to get the full answer from other people. So I think it's about, it's actually, they both can coexist. I can be comfortable in my own skin with my own decision-making process, but it's a lovely place to have people around me who I can support and grow through and have a sounding board. I think we can have both.
Yeah, I think a good example of that is using social media and posting things. And if some, you know, if you post, let's say, a piece of content for business, you want that piece to do really well, but it doesn't matter if it doesn't. Like,
yeah,
don't be checking it. Oh yeah, it got 100 likes, so it was a good post, or this didn't get any likes, so it was a bad post. It should be like, you're just putting it out, and it doesn't matter. And that's, I found that quite difficult, because obviously what we do, it requires putting out content and your own stories and stuff. Even if you don't want to, it's like, that's how you get a client. So what's your experience with like social media and I can't remember what it's called, but there's like a name for it when you're like constantly like checking up and seeing how things are doing.
What do you think, right, about this, that there is no good or bad, there's just situation that creates circumstance, so nothing is good nor bad, so we don't apply that energy to anything, and it's just a situation that created a set of circumstances. Like, I heard this recently, and this is where my mind's been really pondering. So like, that wasn't a good meal or a bad meal. That wasn't a good post or a bad post. That wasn't a good conversation or bad conversation. It's quite like a real way to like kind of uplift from out the situation. It was just something that created a set of circumstances that now I'm applying my perspective of good or bad. Because if I'm attached that way, if I look at the post, the social media post, I can't be attached like that one did really well without being attached to the one that didn't do well. I have to have both. So because of that means I'm still linked to it. I'm still attached. And if I'm attached, I'm not free, which means I'm not free to post creatively and from authenticity, because I want something that's going to give the good circumstances. And so actually, if we were able to be in the place where it's like, neither is good nor bad, it's just my honest assertion of, or my honest belief of something, and it is what it is, that's fully unattached. So I'm totally committed to posting, totally committed to social media, but can you be fully unattached or totally unattached? So I'm in that place where I'm like, trying to kind of really bring that home for myself, and it's a work in progress. It's the best I can say. And so like, social media is a necessity, but I think it's the energy we apply to it that creates the challenges that we have around it. You know, I'm not saying, like, we're not talking here about younger children that don't have the awareness to pull themselves away from it if it's causing problems or they're being bullied. I'm talking about as grown adults who have a period of time in life where we didn't have it, we should be able to create a space where we can see it for what it really is. It's powerful benefits, but be unattached to the need of this has to be everything for me.
And are you saying that's a systemic approach you can apply to life, like remain unattached to
yes, all this? Yes, it has to be, doesn't it? It has to be. If because by the very nature, if I'm attached to the outcome, then I'm attaching it to something I have no control over, which actually goes back to the beginning, what we talked about. So what, there's a really powerful saying by a guy called Peter Crone, which I would highly recommend anybody to study some of his work if they haven't already. And he talks about this thing called fully committed, totally unattached. And I was just like, that's the kind of linchpin, really. And it just kind of joined some dots for me because I was like, yeah, full commitment, right? Full commitment in the pursuit and the creation of what you want in your business, creating content, creating programs and services that people can do, creating more love and value into the world, creating better health for yourself, creating deeper connection and engagement with those you love. Being committed to those things, but totally unattached from the outcomes from them, totally unattached from what happens, totally unattached from the stories and perspectives in life that keep you not free anymore. That's powerful.
Couldn't you argue that if you were totally unattached, 100% unattached from the outcome, you would have no reason to do the initial action?
Could very well be. Could very well be.
You're like a Zen master.
Who?
You are. So I've got questions on this. If I'm at work, right, I'm an oil baron now. I work in Saudi Arabia.
you've just changed the story straight away. You see, you can be whoever you want, as long as you're attached to it.
I've got the beard. We're going with it.
Okay.
I'm an Arabian oil baron and I've got 10,000 employees globally.
Yeah.
And I'm on meetings, you know, 12 hours a day, plus, you know, Japan, plus America, all these different time zones. You know, it ends up being an 18-hour day and, you know, I'm grafting here. But I don't have space in between the meetings to do what I really want to do. How can I remain unattached from doing the meetings that have to get done whilst still making sure that I get some outcomes in my life and in my business?
I think it always comes down to actually what is the reason I believe it needs to be done. Like, so let's say, for example, we're at that level, right? You're the oil baron, you're there. There'll be for each person at that level, and this is not for everybody, but there'll be a story that runs the need for that. I need to look this way. I need to work this way. I need to be perceived as this. It's the energy that creates the drive in the first place, right? Perfectionism, egotism, a need for validation, a need to be seen in a certain way, right? These are standardized human ways that we want to live by. Now, I'd argue, right, that the guy who's the oil baron, let's just say he has a need for perfectionism. I need it to be perfect. Things need to look this way, okay? I need to come across like, you know, I've got this great business and it's doing X, Y, and Z. That's the same energy needed for the person who also didn't get that they needed as a child and became a drug addict and lives on the street and is homeless. Now, we might look different in society. The oil baron's a billionaire and employs 10,000 people. But it's the exact same fear driving that person as the same fear that drives the person who doesn't feel they're enough and lives on the street. And as society, we see one's better than the other, but it's not. The energy that drives us is what creates our feeling of fulfillment and happiness in the process of doing it. Because that's what we're ultimately trying to get to, is this place of contentment, this place of happiness, this place of fulfillment. We see it as a future base. When I've got that, when I've got the next billion, when I've reached this level. And I always get people to think about what is actually driving your behavior in the first place. So there's a part of us, like, is the energy coming from a place of fear, which it often is for many people, versus an energy of like creation. Now, creation, if I'm happy in a place of creating, I'm creating from a place of within, a place of value, a place of I can give something to the world. I'm serving humanity. I'm doing great stuff. Now, the oil baron might be coming from that place because he's like, I'm employing 10,000 people and I love it. But he's certainly not if he's working 18-hour days, because now he's working that way to hold on, keep what I've got, make sure I don't lose this. Maybe my friend's got an extra 3 billion over me. Now I'm comparing to him. You know, I've got 10, but he's got 13. Now I look inadequate to him. I've got to work harder. And then we're in a place of actually what drove that mechanism and programming to that level. And that's where it all becomes very, very interesting, when we start to really peel back. How did he get there? So that's how I kind of like start to look at people now, is actually going into the what energy is driving the desire. Because we can have this need, and I'm totally with this, of actually being fully happy now, not needing any more. If I say I need more, I'm already feeling like my life lacks. If my life lacks, then I'm already seeing myself as not enough, as a disadvantage of myself, meaning my more must be already out there. So my pursuit is to create that to make me feel like I am more as a person. However, if I'm in a space where I can be fully going, this is everything that I need, I don't need any more, and I'm fully content with where I am, but I also want to create, because it's the enjoyment of doing that that creates the fulfillment a little bit more to serve beyond. And it's exciting to do that, but I'm not trying to make myself get to a point where that's all going to come together. That's a very interesting concept. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, mate. It was enjoyably esoteric.
What a great word.
Right, same scenario. Now I'm...
Same guy. He's now gone up the ladder, I'm conscious.
Same scenario. I'm a different guy now.
Okay.
And I'm stuck going to work and I can't control when the meetings are. I just have to turn up to them, but I've still got my job to do. This reflects, this reflects a few of the clients I'm currently working with, where they aren't the leader, but they're, you know, fairly high up, but they're just having to go along with this shit work process. And that's causing, you know, anxiety. That's making them take work home because they've got to catch up after hours because they don't have time in the day. Mm-hmm. What could someone do to, you know, what's some options there?
Let go. Because right now, right, that person is stressed because they're in a conflict with the way life is. That's the problem. You can't control what time the meeting is, and you need to be there. By default, it's your job to be there. You arguing with that reality is creating more stress. Because that's creating more stress, is creating more disease, right? And you know that from a physical standpoint, that creates more physical unhealthy ailments because of it. And the very nature is, as I'm seeing these meetings and situations as something that I don't like or I can't control, well, you either need to do two things. Let go of the perception you have, to let go of like that you can't change it. This is what it is. Accept it for what it is, or do something else and take yourself out. So that's your only choice you have. So we can spend as much time like in all the other parts of life and try to figure out, but if that's creating the dis-ease for me, I'm no longer at ease with that situation. I by default create stress, because I create stress. I'm in conflict with what is in life. And now I'm creating anxiety around it. I'm creating more pressure around it. Well, I either have to let go of that story that I tell myself that I am actually in control and let go of the illusion of it, or I need to get out of it. But I ain't going to change it. And I think the minute we start to like almost like let go, which means the unattachment, letting go of that attachment, something can change. So that's without knowing anything about the person. That's just a general overview of that situation. Yeah. Then we could always go into that person's deepest fears, you know?
And you have to be unattached to do either of those things, accept it or leave it, right?
Yeah. And that's our biggest thing. We're so attached all of the time. And it's like, it's not a case of waiting on one day and be like, I'm gonna patch these up. This is work. This is awareness and practice. Goes back to the same thing. Just peeling back the layers of what I am attached into. Maybe at first you start with like, you know, my wife doesn't make the bed. And maybe I get hung up into that story about how she should be making the bed. And she was the last one out and she never does this. And then this creates this. And I let go of that. And guess what? I make the bed and then that pain's gone. I start making the bed or I just leave it messy. That's my choices. And if we look at it, something as small as that, to the actual discomfort we get at a high level six-figure job, it's the same energy. It doesn't change. And we can apply both with practice by learning how to just start letting go of the things that are not in our control and focusing on what we can control. That's really, it's almost like releasing.
Yeah. Do you think that's a cultural thing that it needs to change or will change with people work from home a bit more now? And
I think it's going to get worse. I know this sounds interesting, right? But I love this type of stuff because I think it's so powerful. But I think we are going to become more fixated on control. Coronavirus has only created that even further. I think for some people, like what it's revealed for some people is freedom. You know, maybe that's a work-life balance element or a bit more health or... And it changed my life and it changed your life. And it's actually changed everybody's lives across the world, whether or not it's a small portion or it's been a big moment. You know, and we're not applying positive or negative here. We're just saying it's changed something. But what it's done for people is, I think for some people, created more fear, more sense of control, more insulation, choose a side, vaccine, non-vaccine. Like now pick and choose. And that's going to create more illusion that we actually are in any sort of control at all. There'll be some people in after the coronavirus who will have let go and gone, fucking hell, can't do now about nothing. Let's just live. Let's just be. And then some people, it's going to get tighter and tighter, more pressure, more internalized pressure. And I think mental health, mental well-being is soaring, right? The challenges with it. Anxiety. What is anxiety? Well, it's illusion of control, and in its basic format, I feel like I've got control of this, or I can control this, or this is not going the way I want. So I'm projecting into the future. That hasn't even happened. It's not even existing for those people, and we're already living in it. That is. It's just so telling.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that people like you and I are out there and there's so many good people out there providing this great information for people and helping people. But and I think more people are waking up, but then there's a lot still like asleep. You know, they're not aware of this. They're unconscious.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk at the moment, like, have you had your vaccine? When's your vaccine? In the UK, and I'm not anti, or you know, I'm not labeling myself like that, but no. I haven't chosen to have the vaccine yet because I just think, you know, I'm young, I'm healthy. There's mm-hmm. people who need it. If there's a finite amount, which there is, send it to a different country. I don't care, but you shouldn't have to. The moment you buy into it is the moment you're labeling yourself, and you're in a camp or you're in the other camp, and that creates conflict. And it's, I think you're right. It's not being addressed. Mm-hmm. And don't really want to get into politics on this show, but man, it's what a weird time just to, mm-hmm. just to observe. You can't just step back and observe, actually. You're in it.
You're already in it, even if you're, like, it's just about, I suppose, like we talked about there, like unattaching, like I don't have to put myself in a camp. I don't have to choose a side. I can just be.
Yeah.
Like if I'm choosing my identity as a vaccinated, non-vaccinated, then I'm just labeling myself more, you know, like I because people's general sense is I must belong somewhere, to something, to some place. And it's like, this is just another sense of belonging through my values. Now, it doesn't take away the fact that if you have really strong values for being vaccinated and the benefits of that, then amazing. And if you have strong values of not being it, then amazing. But that is all you can think about and control. No more pushing onto other people. Oh, you're a bad person for this. You're not bad. You're good for this belief. It's all, you know, and it's amazing to be in another country and actually experience it from a different perspective. If I was in the UK, I can understand the pressure, the mountain pressure. It feels different here without getting into the political side of things. Nobody moved to it, but do you know what I mean? Like, so yeah. Just the perception is different. Yeah. So who knows, man?
Yeah, well, I can't remember who said this quote. And I'm not saying this is vaccine related. This is any decision in life. If there's no reason to do it, then there's no reason not to do it. Possibly it was in the Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck book, or it was something like that.
It's complete. Yeah.
And you sit there and you go, it doesn't make any sense. Let's say I'm hungry, I need to eat. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to eat. If you are purely unattached, you can sit there and starve, or you could fast for a few days, but you can sit there and die. But if there's no reason,
options.
There's no reason not to do it. Then you could also go, you know what, it doesn't matter. You know, if I put it into context, let's say someone's on a really strict diet and they want to have a cheat meal, and they're restricting. Who fucking cares if they have a cheat meal? Like honestly, who fucking cares? What difference does it make? No. Physiologically, if it's one meal, it ain't gonna make, you know, much difference at all. Get back on it the next day. But that mental anguish of not making a decision, just you're carrying that around with you all day.
Weird.
In any decision in life.
That's just bringing more weight to the situation, more heaviness to a life that will weight it down with these expectations and burdens and assumptions. Carrying fucking perceptions around life is just exhausting.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate, you want to...
Yeah, sorry. It was important for you to say that. I just wanted to jump to one more thing, which is that this is completely random. The human construct of time itself. You're going to sum this up, and then we're going to end the podcast. This is the last thing.
It's an illusion.
I've read this book, right, and I never read fiction, but it's called Slaughterhouse-Five, and it's by a guy called Kurt Vonnegut. I'm not sure if you heard of it. The actual author was a prisoner of war in World War II in Dresden. And Dresden obviously had that horrific firebombing, like completely obliterated off the map in World War II. He was in a prisoner of war camp in Dresden when it was bombed. So he was bombed, you know, he was an Allied soldier and he was bombed by the Allies. He comes back, I think, to America, and he writes a book of fiction that's intertwined with his experiences of coming out of a bomb shelter and seeing the apocalypse, you know.
Wow.
But he's writing it from the perspective of himself, like in the 70s as an old guy in hospital, but he doesn't write it like he's recollecting it. He writes it that he's time traveling back there. And then he time travels forward to like his first wife and then on his deathbed and then back to like being a kid. And the whole book is a commentary on how time is an illusion, and these things are just moments in the present. And you sit there and you go, I'm not into science fiction or anything like that, but so this was like a massive like new kind of thing for me to read. And you go, you know, wow, time doesn't exist, then everything that's here right now, like the trees and the sea and, you know, this rock, that's going to be there when I die, and it's going to be there in like 5-10 years, and it's always been there, right? In matter in some form. And you start going, oh my god, there's a permanence to things, and there's a fluidity, and I can go backwards, I can go forwards, I can I can perceive things. And I've always been fascinated by history, and I was like, wow, what if every time I go and see like historical monument or a site of interest, it's you're actually connecting with that moment exactly how they saw it. If time doesn't exist, then that's the truth. There's no gap between us and the ancient Romans. There's you go to that site and it's exactly how it would have been for them. We're not any better than them. I saw this amazing thing from Pompeii, and it was like a picture of they'd excavated a bakery, and it literally had like a menu, prices, you know, a painting of a baguette thing.
Amazing.
You would have gone there and just, you know, basically paid a quid for a sausage roll and got out. Like, literally is no different. But you perceive everything as always going forward. It's always this pressure of changing. You've got to keep up with it. We're better than everything that's gone before. This almost arrogance of self that everyone buys into.
Yep.
And so that book for me was really interesting because I started going, it doesn't matter that I've had a gym. I'm a different person now. It doesn't matter that I've had all these failures. You know, that was then, and actually they were lessons, and you start perceiving things in a different way. And it's been proven now that personality, your mood and how you talk to yourself is related to how long you live. So if you start aging physically, it's not because of the passage of time, it's simply because your cells aren't regenerating as effectively as they used to. That's just a normal process.
Yeah.
So mentally, just you're the same person.
Beautiful. And
you can do everything that you always wanted to do. You know, you can start a new career when you're 80, you know, but don't buy into this passage of time bullshit. Anyway, sum that up and then we'll end the podcast.
Dude, you summed it up beautifully, absolutely beautifully. Like, I'm with you, right? So like, I don't like know how to like explain it, but I just explain it in this way. Like, time is the illusion, right? And the way that really stuck with me was, I would always say the thing of be like, I'll be happy when. So when I've got to this place, when I've accomplished this, when I'm down that road. And now I catch the same thing with clients now. So what you've just officially done is you've just basically projected yourself in a future that you think's better than the now. But there is no there. It doesn't exist. There is no there. 1 year, 2 years, tomorrow is just not, it's not there. We have the likelihood that it's coming round. But that, it's just like time will tell. In time, things will be different. Like, it's just a mental construct that we've created, the illusion of it. All that we have is the moment. Even the past is just a series of your history of memories constructed together, where you've put time in between certain things. The time between where we are now and the time when we had a gym, we've just created this passage that we've been through. And you're right, for me, there is only the now. I'd never heard of anybody say when they went back, you like in the way you put it, where you could be like, I'm looking at this fort, and it's exactly how they would have seen it. You know, maybe it's a few more bricks and a roof on it, but this is still the same moment that we are having that they had. So I'm all for, you know, I don't wear a watch, and I'm never late for anything. You know, people go, well, you use your phone for time, but it's bullshit. Sunrises and sunsets, and you move through life at the regular pace as life moves forward. And so that's why I always get with people, is that like, time does not exist. The only thing you're creating is what's in the present moment, and that by doing that, what will create consequences and outcomes that will move the next into the next day for you, should that day be available for you. There's no point waiting to be happy. There's no point waiting to be more fulfilled. You're either happy now or you're not. You either can create happiness in this moment or not. You can create success from this point. You can create more health from this point. You can create a deeper connection and relationship that matter from this point. It is not something to wait. And so that comes from that point of view. And that's it. Don't know if that helps.
Boom. Yeah, that was wicked, mate. I really enjoyed that. I was like captivated then. Yeah, I mean, mate, there's so much we can talk about. What we'll have to do is we'll do another episode in the future. Okay. Or anything I can do to help you, like happy to do it. Let me sum up. Bloody hell. We've only gone through time, space, personality.
Stories, illusions, perceptions.
Okay, so we started out with the illusion of control. Oh, there's loads of notes that I didn't even get to, mate. It was wicked. The illusion of control, there is no control. Maslow, he said, people are blissfully unaware of things, gain awareness, practice awareness, and journaling is a great way of practicing. We said about relationships, supporting your partner, but not dependent on them, being independent and not caring whether people are there or not, but it doesn't mean that you don't value them. Create support groups for other men, remain unattached, fully committed, totally unattached. Was that guy called Peter Crone?
Yeah, Peter Crone.
I'll link to that in like the show notes.
Yeah.
And then we said, if you're in a situation that you're not enjoying, you can either accept it, it is what it is, or come up with some options and leave it.
Isn't that freeing though? To just be like, this is a situation, either accept and let go or come up with new options.
Yeah.
Instead of just fighting against what is.
Yeah, it is. Every time I've had a sense of dread in my life, you know, that Sunday night feeling or, you know, a big presentation or a big game coming up, it's because you want to do well. It's because you're fully attached. You're fully attached.
Because you care.
Yeah.
But you know, even with that, though, Ant, like that's okay, though. Like, that's important to recognize. It's like, it's okay for me to feel like I care about this game. I care about this presentation. Like, that's human. Caring's good. It's the worrying that creates the attachment, the concern and the worry about what might happen if, what might be, if I stumble, if I don't say the right thing, if I drop the ball, you know, that's where that's, and if you can be unattached to that of the, and like almost identify the worst case scenario and accept it and be okay with it, then you are free to perform at your best. Because you care, that's a beautiful thing, that's human. But it's the worrying concern that creates the anxiety in the first place that makes us be more het up than what would need to be. Because, you know, you play rugby, right? And you're playing a game. To be like totally like, I don't really care about this, it wouldn't give you a good performance either. The same as being too anxious. There's that flow state, isn't there?
There's an example that I always like. You don't realize you're doing this. I think sport is so good. Competitive sport is so good to teach you these lessons, because I would run into tackles knowing I could get knocked out, nose broken, whatever. And I did several times. Mm-hmm. I didn't care. I was like, I don't care. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. Or now, mate, I haven't played rugby since I last saw you in Barcelona, I don't think.
Right.
So now I do strongman, but it's like so painful. I'm always like joking with Dean, my coach. I'm such a fanny about it. But like your hand, like it rips the skin off your hands, and you're dropping like crazy things on your spine and stuff. And I had to get into the exact same mindset where if the skin on my hands rips off, I don't care. I'm lifting it. Like I'm accepting all negative outcomes in my head before I go into it, because I know what I'm getting myself into. And I think for me, it's a process. Like if I do a presentation or a call or something does go bad, I've got that frame of being unattached, and I know it doesn't matter, but at the time it matters for me. Like now it does matter, but I can get to that frame of feeling unattached a lot quicker than when I was younger.
Yeah, because I think that maybe is important for like some people to, if they are listening to it, and it's like, can go to your relationships, your business, these other things. It's not about not caring. Like that's, we're not talking about like being like emotionally unattached. Like I'm just distant. That's not, humans aren't ever going to be that, nor should we. We have this real sense of like, I care, I'm in love. You know, I want to be in this space, love the sport, love the business, love creating, love being the relationship. But what we're talking about is like you're unattached from the concerns and worries of what might happen, what might be. If this relationship leaves, I'll never feel love again. No, it's not true. If I mess up this presentation, I'm worthless and I'll never do another one again. Again, it's not true.
And it can set you up on a weird path in life.
Exactly, because then you become dependent on the success of this outcome to validate me as a human being. When realistically, you can come into them spaces like, I care and I want to do the best I can. And to be honest, we're just trying to do the best that we can most of the time. But I can unattach and let go of the worries and concerns about the illusions of what will happen or what could happen. And we have to be able to unattach from them. It comes from a place of like, I really care and love this. And that's a great thing. It's so powerful.
It is, mate. We'll end it there. That's a brilliant thing to end it on. Where can people follow you online, find out more about you, maybe do your courses?
So my website is iamdavidwilkinson.com. So iamdavidwilkinson.com. That's my website. There's blogs on there. You can find out about my coaching, what I do and other things. Instagram, David Wilkinson Coach. That's my Instagram handle. And LinkedIn's the other place for, I'm quite active on there, like David Wilkinson on there. And you'll see it's a picture of my face on there. So they like, Instagram and LinkedIn is where I do most of the social content. So people have different platforms to go there or look on the website.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'll put all those links in the show notes and everything that we spoke about. I'll try and kind of summarize with a few links. But thanks, mate. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you're welcome, mate. Thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it, mate. It's good to sit and talk with a like-minded man and share.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Been awesome, mate. Appreciate it. Well, I hope to talk to you soon, mate, but thanks for doing this.
Definitely.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Spot on, mate. Thank you.